Hey, we all know how tough it can be to find the time to sit down and make progress on a book you've been trying to read. Tell me about it. I've got two kids. But what if I told you it's possible to absorb 10 nonfiction books in just an afternoon? Well, that's exactly what today's sponsor, Blinkist.com/ROF, allows you to do. Blinkist is the only app that takes popular nonfiction books, distills them down into summaries that you can read or listen to in about 15 minutes. You'll still get the most important takeaways and the crucial information from each book, but it'll be so in a concise, efficient package that you can consume in one sitting or at the gym or on your way to work or in between podcasts. Now look, I know I want to make time for reading as many books as I can, but there's only so many hours in the week. So why not go ahead and get the most valuable insights from nonfiction books that you otherwise wouldn't have had time for? They have everything from politics, history, philosophy, to economics, business, psychology, and personal development. You can try Blinkist totally free and get access to their library of thousands of condensed nonfiction books by going to Blinkist.com/ROF. That's Blinkist, BLINKIST.com/ROF. Welcome to Ring of Fire Radio. On today's show, healthcare journalist Trudy Lieberman will tell us about her own catastrophic health event and what it taught her about the U.S. healthcare system. Matt Gertz from Media Matters for America will join us to discuss revelations from a piece in the New Yorker magazine exposing Fox News and its incredibly tight relationship with President Trump. Heather Digby Parton from Salon will join me to discuss the biggest news stories of the week. And attorney and consumer advocate Stephen Scheller will be here to discuss his new book, Big Pharma, Big Greed. If you're new to the show, you can find the free one-hour podcast of Ring of Fire Radio on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, support Ring of Fire Radio by becoming a member and getting our three-hour radio show commercial-free. You can go to ROFpodcast.com to sign up. Here to run down the biggest stories of the week, Heather Parton from Salon, or as you may know her, Digby. So, Heather, let's start with what's happening on the Donald Trump corruption. It does feel in the past couple of weeks, and I think when you wrote about this, on some level, it feels like the investigations into Donald Trump, what is in play has expanded exponentially. And you had a fascinating piece about this that in many respects, I mean, it's to be expected, Democrats come into office, but there is almost a pent-up demand that is overwhelming, I think, both the arguments of the president and of the Republicans on some level, but also that is sort of allowing for the expansion of all these questions regarding Donald Trump. And this is coming at a time where we were supposedly going to hear about the Mueller investigation report over the past week or two. But now it feels like what we really have a sense of is that the Mueller investigation is really just running in parallel with a whole, I don't know, series of investigations.
Well, I think you're right. And truthfully, that's the way it should have been from the beginning, because the Congress has a different, you know, mandate. It the oversight mandate of the Congress, with all of these things having been revealed in the press and what we knew about what happened in the election and the interference, it's one thing to have that, you know, that special counsel's office doing this, you know, investigation in which they have access to a tremendous amount of, you know, classified material. They have to work on some level in secret simply because of the foreign policy and national security angle on that story. But there are dozens of stories that have been out there. And my personal feeling is that the Republicans made a big mistake in deciding to just go totally in with the, you know, on the House side, they just became absolute accomplices of the president in trying to cover up everything. On the Senate side, they played it with a little bit more dignity, but they basically did the same thing, which is they just abdicated all responsibility for oversight. And my feeling is that they would have been way smarter to have, you know, had some hearings, maybe, you know, had some of these people up for a public hearing, done a little bit of questioning. You know, they were in charge. I mean, they could have controlled the agenda greatly and just sort of, you know, been a little bit of a release valve on some of this.
Right. Let a little bit of the air out of the tires, as it were.
Exactly. So now we're with this thing where it's just exploded, as well it should, and not just should, it must. Because there is that, you know, that we don't want the Southern District of New York or the special counsel to be leaking like sieves the way that Ken Starr's people did. That's wrong. They're law enforcement people, that it's just wrong for them to do that. You know, hopefully we'll have a good report or some, you know, indictments will come down that will explain what they're doing in New York. But we don't want them leaking to the press for political purposes. So, but there is a huge political element to this. So, and that's where the Congress comes in. So now it's all, you know, it's all kind of flowing out there. And by the way, let me just mention it in an aside. The media is doing, and some Democrats, you know, they're out there too, kind of like, oh, it's overreach and they're going too far. And, you know, they really need to be careful because then Donald Trump will claim victimhood. And I'm going, are you kidding? This is a guy who's been screaming witch hunt in the middle of the night
right.
for the last 2 years. Of course he's going to claim victimhood. He already has. And, you know, the idea that the Democrats should be concerned with that, under these circumstances, these aren't, you know, they're not just flailing around with some stupid Solyndra Fast and Furious nonsense. These are real scandals. I mean, they are real and they are significant. I mean, we've got basically bribes going on. We've got big companies coming and hanging around in the lobbies of the Trump Hotel and paying vast sums of money to stay there so they can, you know, grease the skids for mergers. I mean, it is beyond belief that anybody would say to the Democrats, well, you know, maybe don't make trouble here because you'll look bad. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. But, of course, it's to be expected that, you know, that some of the timorous Democrats, there is always a few who do this. And then the media, of course, who's, you know, they're wringing their hands over this, too. Not all of them, but enough that I've noticed.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
this bit of conventional wisdom kind of simmering out there.
There feels like this is a pretty unique context, right? Like this, it feels like it is very difficult for Democrats to get out in front of their skis, as they say, in this instance, because of the what feels like right now the bottomless pit of corruption that Trump, let's be clear, you know, we talked about the Cohen hearings, I think it was last week. I've lost complete track of time. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez got some very good plaudits for her questioning of Cohen. And I think we are now maybe 2 weeks later. We see the implications of her questions. That at least, you know, one set of her questions ended up spurring a completely non-congressional, non-partisan investigation by, I think, you know, an insurance board in New York State into claims that Trump had filed, you know, in the context of his business. And I think, you know, one of the things that's And I want to take a break here in a minute. And when we come back on the other side, I want to get your opinion on this, because I am of a couple of minds here. But from an analysis standpoint, it's clear to me that the Democrats felt that they had to make the question of Russian collusion a dominant narrative because it involves national security. And they did not have the ability to do a legitimate investigation into Donald Trump, his actions in office, his actions before office, et cetera, et cetera, because the Republicans simply weren't going to have it, right? I mean, like you said, they could have had investigations and just sort of poo-pooed things and, you know, compartmentalized and but they didn't. And so it's created this big sort of pent up demand. But it, you know, there's an entire strain of investigation that the Southern District of New York seems to be undertaking that feels like it has like three or four investigatory tracks going on simultaneously, which is running parallel to the Mueller investigation. You know, we thought for a while what Mueller was trying to do was sort of inoculate himself from presidential action. That may have been part of it. But it's also clear that he was like, maybe he didn't feel like he had enough of an apparatus, that there was so much that they were running into that they needed to hand it off to another investigatory agency, specifically the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney's Office. All right. Well, I want to take your I want to get your take on that dynamic, and if those things that the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Manhattan is finding and the insurance investigations and whatnot are overshadowed by the notion of collusion. And from a political standpoint, maybe Democrats didn't necessarily play it the right way or not. I don't know. You tell me when we come back. I'm Sam Seder. This is Ring of Fire Radio.
All the pretty girls like Samuel. Oh, it really doesn't share. Though it's more than he can handle. Life is anything but fair. Life is anything but fair. Oh, 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 oh.
Hey, folks, you're listening to the free version of the Ring of Fire Radio podcast. Each week, you hear my dulcet tones tell you that you are the people who keep this show chugging along. That's right. You listen to the show. Maybe you listen to it every week. Maybe you listen to it a couple of times a month. Why not head over to ROFpodcast.com, sign up for the full show, commercial free. It is a great way to support the show, and it's also a great way to hear a bunch of interviews that you're missing. Not only that, you get access to our archives, over 10 years worth of interesting interviews with top names in politics and thought across the country. Check it out. ROFpodcast.com. As always, thanks for your listening. Welcome back to Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Seder here with Heather Parton from Salon. So, Heather, you wrote in Salon this week about the pent-up demand for legitimate investigations, right? Some form of oversight. And it really became compelling with the Cohen testimony, because he was brought in there and there was, you know, if not explicit, decree by the Democrats that we're not going to be talking about Russia here, right? And to a certain extent, the Republicans wanted to bring it up a little bit. But that was a pretty intense committee hearing and testimony, considering the fact that it involved very little of the sort of primary narrative we've heard about in terms of investigations in Trump, right? I mean, there was basically a whole other litany of not only discussion of criminal activity, but discussion of a whole nother investigation of criminal activity.
Absolutely. And I think it was actually, you know, it was an effective sort of opening salvo, I think, because what Cohen was, you know, when I think we talked about this, you know, Cohen said, you know, he said, hey, look, Republicans, you know, look at me. Look, I'm the guy who did his bidding all these years. I know where you're at. I understand your position here. It's not going to work out well for you. And so Cohen made a sort of a broad based kind of analysis of Trump on the level of corruption and on the level of character that I think was really an effective way to sort of go forward, kind of positioning, you know, the new era of how we're going to look at Trump. And, you know, you said before you asked before whether or not it was smart for the Democrats to have sort of framed this whole thing around the Russia investigation. And I'm not sure. It's a good question. I hadn't thought about it before, but you may be right. I mean, there's been a lot in the press. There's been a lot, you know, sort of discussed among Democrats about the corruption issue and about, you know, Maxine Waters has been all over TV talking about Deutsche Bank and money laundering and, you know, Trump's finances. And there's been a lot of discussion about the Trump Organization, but it hasn't been very focused. You know, I think the focus has always been on the Mueller report, on the Mueller investigation. And of course, Trump has sort of pushed that as well, screaming no collusion every 5 minutes. So I'm not sure that the Democrats could have refocused, but they probably should have, in retrospect, maybe done more in that regard, just to set the table a little bit for what's coming. Because it does seem that, I mean, I'm sure that the intelligence committees are working on the Russia story. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. And there's also Saudi Arabia, there's Qatar, there's a whole lot of stuff in there about Trump and various foreign policy issues with Russia at the forefront. But it does look as though, I mean, this is going to be just looking at the 81 document requests that the Judiciary Committee sent out. They are looking at a lot of the corruption angle on Trump, and rightfully so. And not just, I don't think it's just going to be what he did before he came into office, although that, you know, they set the precedent for that when they went after Bill Clinton for Whitewater, which had been, right, you know, decades previous thing. So that is on the table because Republicans put it on the table, and there's nothing they can do about that. And not to mention the fact that it does play into where Trump's you know, where all these questions of Trump's loyalties and how he, you know, what, whether or not he's been leveraged in some way by Russia and other foreign interests, and why he is, you know, why he behaves the way he does, his business is intrinsic to that. Even more importantly, he never let go of the business. He's still, in fact, we've just found out this week that he's been signing checks for, you know, in the White House. And, you know, we know that he's been signing them for, the New York Times put out that he's been signing checks to pay off Michael Cohen. But apparently, according to Maggie Haberman, New York Times reporter, he's been signing all kinds of checks. We don't know what they are, but it's kind of hard to imagine what they could be for. He doesn't have any overhead, and he's turned over the business, apparently, you know, supposedly, to his sons. So there's really no reason for this, and so that's a very curious thing. So he may very well still be conducting business as president, and that is something that goes way beyond anything that happened before he, you know, decided to run for president or took office. So all of the stuff, I mean, there's a massive amount of this, and hopefully, I kind of trust, I think that Jerry Nadler's a very smart guy. I think that Elijah Cummings is very smart, and I think that Adam Schiff is very smart. I think these three committee leaders in particular, I think they understand that they have to focus this in a way so that people can understand it. Whether it leads to impeachment or not, we don't know. I think they'll let the chips fall where they may on that. But right, they do know that they have to lay out the case and create the narrative for all this stuff that we've been hearing for the last 2 years. And that's got to be the primary focus. And it's not easy. They're going to have to, you know, they have to start someplace and build that case. But I do think that they understand that that's what they have to do.
Yeah, and my sense is that what we are seeing may not be called impeachment hearings, and it may not happen quick enough for Trump to be impeached before 2020. But what we're seeing are essentially on the road to impeachment hearings. I mean,
yeah,
you know, when you contemplate the idea that Bill Clinton was impeached for lying in a deposition about having sex with someone that I don't even think he had met until his second term in office. Donald Trump seems to have crossed that threshold multiple times, right?
Yeah.
And so, all right, well, listen, we got to take a quick break. And if you'll join me in the next hour, we've got a lot more news to talk about. I'm Sam Cedar. This is Ring of Fire Radio. Coming up, how Fox News affects the Donald Trump presidency. I'm Sam Cedar. This is Ring of Fire Radio.
If I told you things I did before, told you how I used to be, would you go along with someone like me? And we don't care about the young folks.
Hey, one of today's sponsors, BetterHelp.com/ROF. BetterHelp is an online service that gives you access to your own experienced, fully licensed therapist. You can do so by way of phone, video, or text. When you see a therapist in person in their office, it about takes 3 weeks on average before you're actually able to get your first appointment. But with BetterHelp, you're matched with a therapist who fits your needs within just 24 hours, and you get the same professional service. And the best part, BetterHelp is less expensive than seeing a therapist in person. Plus, you'll have totally unlimited access to the therapist. You can talk to them whenever you want, on your phone or on your computer. And because BetterHelp believes in what they do, they have a full money-back guarantee. If for whatever reason you're not happy with the service, you'll get a full refund, no questions asked. All of their therapists go through an extensive vetting process and are required to have at least 3 years of experience before joining BetterHelp. So you know you're getting someone who is fully qualified to help you. But if you don't think your therapist is a good fit, BetterHelp lets you switch to someone new at any time. Get started right now by going to BetterHelp.com/ROF. Welcome back to Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Cedar. Earlier this week, the New Yorker magazine published an amazing piece by investigative journalist Jane Mayer on the ties between Fox News and Donald Trump. Here to discuss these ties and how it affects the presidency, Matt Gaertz, senior fellow at Media Matters for America. So, Matt, this is a big piece by Jane Mayer, and she has impeccable credentials when it comes to reporting. Much of this stuff is stuff that we, if we didn't know, we saw the broad outlines of, but to see it laid out in such a methodical way is a little bit disturbing. Let's talk about the relationship between Donald Trump and Fox News. When the campaign started out, Fox News and Donald Trump were, you know, at loggerheads. And it's a little bit weird to think of Roger Ailes as some type of mitigating force, but that's what it appears it was.
Yeah, I think that's the take in this article. I think what's clear is during the campaign, there were several different power centers. Mayer writes that the various different hosts were sort of allowed to go their own way. And so you had Hannity, who was very much an early supporter of Donald Trump. You had Bill O'Reilly sort of remaining neutral. Megyn Kelly, somewhat more critical. The Fox and Friends gang were big supporters, as he had long been a regular guest on their programs. But Roger Ailes was at times somewhat concerned with the way Trump handled things, particularly the way Trump handled his relationship with Fox News itself. After the Republican primary debate, in which Megyn Kelly went after Trump on his despicable treatment of women, Trump lashed out at Kelly. And what ended up happening was a lot of Fox's audience ended up rallying around Trump rather than around Fox, which I think was kind of a surprise for Ailes. And, you know, it took a while, and there was clearly a metamorphosis over the course of the campaign. But at the end of the day, Fox ended up rallying to Trump's banner and becoming what it is now, which is more or less a state TV apparatus for the president.
And we should say, though, that there is a reporting in the piece that suggests that Trump knew that that question from Megyn Kelly was coming enough so that he complained before the debate.
Yeah, that is one of the revelations in the piece, that Trump had been informed of this ahead of time, that he knew something was up. This also comes up in Megyn Kelly's book as well, which I believe Mayer notes that, you know, at one point she had become aware that he seemed to know what she was planning to do, and that was quite troubling. I mean, that is, at the end of the day, you end up with Ailes helping Trump out with his debate prep for the general election, so none of that is terribly implausible, and certainly something to keep in mind.
So, Matt, I mean, it seems to me, and I just want to stay in this sort of like this little narrow context of the story at this moment, is that, because it's very hard for me as someone who has followed the development of Fox News more or less professionally over the course of 15 years to accept the idea that from Ailes' perspective, that there was some type of journalistic problem in being overly supportive of Donald Trump. I mean, when Barack Obama entered the White House in 2008, there was a broad sense that Fox News was, in many respects, simply a Republican party mouthpiece. There was only dissent, frankly, amongst other reporters when the Obama administration tried to push Fox News a couple of seats back in the White House pool seats. I mean, literally, there were reporters from other news organizations who complained about that. But broadly speaking, those who followed these things understood that Fox News was not really a news outlet as much as they were as a propaganda arm for the Republican Party. Now, you can have left-leaning and right-leaning media, but they would simply toe the Republican Party line. It seems to me it's as if Ailes was concerned about putting all of Fox's eggs in such a narrow basket, as opposed to it's inappropriate for us to be supportive of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think there's no question that Roger Ailes did not have a very strong sense of ethics, journalistic or otherwise, and the idea that he would avoid making the network too close to Trump because of out of some sense of ideals is deeply flawed. I think people have very short memories when it comes to Fox. By people, I mean those who don't pay attention to them professionally, like you and I do. There's a quote in here in the Mayer article from Bill Kristol. Says Bill Kristol, right, who's a paid contributor to Fox until 2012 and is a prominent never-Trumper, said of the network, quote, "It's changed a lot. Before it was conservative, but it wasn't crazy. Now it's just propaganda." That is some self-serving nonsense. When,
right,
Bill Kristol was being paid by Fox News, his colleague was Glenn Beck. And I've been watching Fox News professionally for 12 years. There is no period of time in which Fox News was crazier than in the 2009, 2010, 2011 Glenn Beck years, the early days of the Obama administration, when they were doing all sorts of ridiculous conspiracy theories. Now, things have changed to some extent. Fox has always been a propaganda apparatus for the Republican Party and the conservative movement, but those things change over time. And so you see the network reinventing itself. You see it going into a, sort of extreme over-the-top patriotism flare after the beginning of the war in Iraq. You see it reinventing itself as a, anti-Obama outlet the network's executives referring to it as the Alamo, the sort of last stand,
right,
to prevent Obama and his socialism from taking over the country. And you see it reinventing itself again, leading into the 2016 elections as this current iteration that is, as one of the people quoted in the article said, state TV. It's a straight-up apparatus that is devoted to the president himself. And that's different, and that's, I think, scary in different ways than past iterations of Fox. But I think we need to get past the point that there was some golden age where Fox was a legitimate news organ and made a massive change in its practices. That's simply not the case.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think that is the real story here, it seems to me, is not just sort of the behavior and how it reflects, but how structurally
really structurally, this thing is the relationship between the Trump administration, really Donald Trump. I mean, let's be honest, the Trump administration is not some type of sprawling enterprise. It is a small cabal, if you will, of people that the way that Fox and Trump are intertwined is not only fascinating and scary from a structural standpoint, but it also has massive implications for the 2020 election and for any proceedings that are brought against Trump or happen against Trump in terms of like accountability. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about those things. And let's also talk about how the interest of Fox News, not only do they serve Donald Trump, but Donald Trump has returned the favor in some respects. We got to take a quick break. I'm Sam Cedar. This is Ring of Fire Radio. We'll be right back with Matt Gaetz in just a moment.
Can you even see what you're fighting for? Bloodlust and a holy war. Listen up, hear the patriots shout. Time's up.
Folks, the Ring of Fire is sponsored by JustCoffee.coop. That's JustCoffee.coop. If you like fair trade, delicious coffee, tea, or chocolate, head over to JustCoffee.coop, use the coupon code MAJORITY, and get 10% off. There's free shipping. You have no reason not to get this great coffee. It's a great outfit in Madison, Wisconsin, which supported the protests there. JustCoffee.coop.
Back on Ring of Fire Radio, I'm Sam Cedar. Right now I'm talking with Matt Gaetz from Media Matters about Jane Mayer's recent piece in the New Yorker magazine exposing the deep, deep ties between Fox News and Donald Trump. So, Matt, when we broke, we were making the point about this story by Jane Mayer in the New Yorker about Fox News and just and the reporting, largely about Fox News. There was a there was a piece of reporting this week by Gabriel Sherman saying that Rupert Murdoch had asked Donald Trump to get the U.S. spy apparatus to basically spy on or assess whether Rupert Murdoch's ex-wife is a Chinese spy. It's a bizarre request. Rupert Murdoch is not in the business of making requests for things he doesn't think he's going to get. In this instance, but there's no reporting to the effect that this actually went through. But I want to talk about why, despite the fact that Fox News has always been somewhat unhinged, has always been carrying water in many respects for the Republican Party, why it is different now. Like, there is a structural difference here. And despite the exit of both the company and the planet of Roger Ailes, this relationship with Trump and Fox News seems even like more, I want to say stronger, but it's almost like it's intertwined. It's almost like they're fused in many respects.
Yeah, I think one way to look at it is that Donald Trump has basically replaced Roger Ailes in this structure. The division at Fox News, going back to the very beginning, was between Ailes and Murdoch. Ailes is the Politico, someone who came up through, working for Richard Nixon, working for Reagan and Bush, and is a deeply committed Republican political type. Rupert Murdoch is a conservative in some ways, but he's also mainly a businessman. He's in this for the money. He sees where this marketplace is and ways in which he can take advantage of it, and he enjoys garnering power through his media outlets. Using them to get politicians to take positions that end up benefiting him down the line. With Ailes gone, the political side of this arrangement really moved almost entirely towards Trump himself. That's because Trump is probably more obsessed with Fox News than anyone else I can think of. He has been watching the channel hours a day for years and years. He got his political rise by going on Fox and Friends one morning a week for several years and just taking their questions about whatever the conservative movement was interested in and learning about what that was and how he could manipulate it. When he started running for president, he was appearing on Fox basically constantly, calling in, appearing on air, what have you. And when he became president, he basically merged his operation with Fox's. And so you have a bunch of former Fox people in cabinet roles, in White House roles, throughout his administration. I think about a dozen of them now. You have former Trump employees going over to Fox itself. And you have the whole operation being moved to buttress his message, basically top to bottom, night in and night out. And so, you know, you have the situation where he is watching this programming on a constant basis. They're giving him ideas. He's tweeting out what he sees, giving interviews to the network that both give him a basically free reign to talk about whatever he wants because they don't really bother to challenge him, and simultaneously increase the power of the network because no one else can get as much time with him as Fox can. You know, it's a really insidious arrangement, basically a total merger between the White House and this conservative propaganda outlet.
And it really, I think, has created what I think is a fairly new dynamic in American politics, and that being the idea that, you know, it used to be Fox was dangerous because it would essentially launder stuff from the fever swamps, and it would end up on you know, it would go from you know, Drudge to Fox to ABC News. And now it's as if the game is not to to infect the narrative within the mainstream media. It is as if to create a secondary sort of parallel narrative to the narrative that is, you know, I don't want to say conventional wisdom because I think it's a little bit of a loaded term, but the narrative that most people subscribe to, there's this counter narrative that can sustain itself. And it seems, at least to some extent, sustain Donald Trump.
And a key facet of this, I think, is that traditionally, as you say, Fox would pull these stories from the fever swamp and push them out, try to get them into the mainstream media. What happens now is that whole system is short-circuited because what will happen instead is Fox will do the reports and then Trump will start tweeting about them. And all of a sudden, by virtue of the fact that the president's words are treated as intrinsically newsworthy, you have the rest of the media jumping on his tweets and trying to figure out what he's talking about. When he's right. talking about it to be some sort of conspiracy theory from Fox News. And that's how you end up with, you know, in the weeks leading up to the midterm elections, the number one story being covered by virtually every news outlet being a caravan of migrants 1,000 miles away from the U.S. border. That happened because Fox News was reporting on it constantly. Fox News started telling Donald Trump that he should use the caravan as a campaign issue. And then he started doing it. He started talking about it on Twitter. He started talking about it, you know, with in-press availabilities. And before you knew it, that was what everyone was covering because it was what the president was talking about.
All right, so we have about 2 minutes left here. I want to turn our attention to what I found fascinating about Trump using the government apparatus to essentially benefit Fox News, and that is like a two-step or a three-step process. One is sign off on the Fox's sale of their assets to Disney, which was certainly you could make an antitrust argument about, but then simultaneously keeping Sinclair Media from buying Tribune, which I happen to agree with. I thought that was there was a big waiver there, but they certainly looked like they were trying to do that. and the AT&T Time Warner merger, which I am also against, but I don't think that Donald Trump and I share the same reasoning behind this. It was really more of a function of what was going to benefit Fox. I mean, what can you say about that?
Well, this is the tricky thing about all of these merger stories, right? Because on some level, we might think that the results are good, that they are reasonable things to have happen. But the reason that the president is pursuing them isn't because he has some sort of real sense of American antitrust law or a desire to move the country in a particular direction on that. It's because he really hates particular outlets and really likes other particular outlets. And that seems to be what's focusing his attention. I mean, he cares about the AT&T merger because it involves CNN, which he hates and calls Fox News on fake news on a more or less constant basis. He's much more upbeat with the merger that helps the merger, the Murdoch family. He is against the merger that would have given more power to a potential Fox rival. And so that's really the problem here, that at the end of the day, you know, the president's reasons for doing the things that he's doing are nakedly corrupt.
Right. We are corrupting the system in which these things are adjudicated. And the point of antitrust is certainly not to give the chief executive monopoly power based upon what helps his one particular friend. Matt Gaertz, thanks for your time today. Folks should definitely check out this Jane Mayer article. It is long, but it is well worth the read. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Matt Gaertz is a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. When we come back, Heather Digby Parton will join us to analyze more news from the past week. That's just ahead. I'm Sam Cedar. You're listening to Ring of Fire Radio. Check out ROFpodcast.com to hear what you've been missing.